Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:42 British Summer Time. Well, this has been quite an interesting 24 hours, and I think that's pretty much an understatement. There's been activity in just about every asset class. Now, I suppose starting off, this is the big picture Friday audio. So I'll start off with just a brief summary of what's happened, and then we move into the sort of the big picture, longer term themes. So, what has happened in the last 24 hours? Well, the Fed raised rates by a quarter of a point, which wasn't at all unexpected. Off the back of that, there was a fantastic rally in US equities. The Nasdaq was up nearly 3%. So that looked like quite a good dynamic. It's starting to give it up in here today, so no follow through there, which is indicative of the medium term correction that we're in. But what that also did was it gave impetus for pretty much all markets that had been sort of basing or had been in right-hand extensions to have a really good rally in here today. So Japan had a good rally. So did Hong Kong in particular. Hong Kong was up 2.5%, actually the exact same as the Nikkei. Nikkei was up 2.5%. The ASX in Australia was up 1.5%. And across the board in Europe, everything was up over 1%. Just bar the FTSE, that was up only 0.75%. So good rallies across the board. Now the fact that the US isn't following through on that today probably means that we're going to see those gains pegged back a bit in Europe on Monday. Now that's in particular because the dollar has weakened in here quite significantly today. I think yesterday, because of the I think David had been talking or anticipating that Bernanke was going to give a reasonably dovish comment following that rate increase, and he did. So the currency markets are starting to think that we're pretty close to the peak in interest rates, which is taking a prop out from under the dollar. So the euro is currently sitting at 127.80, up over 1 cent in here today. And you had that key reversal in cable yesterday, and it's up nearly 2 cents in here today, 184.64. So you're getting a dollar weakness creeping in here, and that is not going to go down particularly well with European markets because manufacturers in Europe are very keen to have a weak euro. So I don't know really where the flame is going to come from to push those European markets up next week, particularly since we're not seeing this follow through today in the US. But we're still in a medium-term correction there in equity markets. Bond markets had a reasonably good rally in here as well. The US markets are up, the treasuries, 30-year treasuries are up 21 points, 10 years are up 13 points, and that's a rally from pretty much the bottom of the range there. Excuse me. We've also seen a really quite a good rally in gold. Gold is up nearly $15 right now. It's at 614.45. Likewise, we've seen another very good rally in platinum. It was up $44 in here today. That's at over $1,200 as well. Palladium is up $10, and silver is currently sitting almost exactly on $11. So you've got pretty good rallies here across the board in the precious metals, and that's obviously on the back of the weaker dollar. Then industrial metals, you've also had reasonably good gains in here. Nickel was up another $600, so that's moved back up into that top formation. That is the only base metal that has done that, though. Copper is up in here today as well, nearly $4 at 335.95. Now, that's oil is at 73.87. Gasoline has, which had looked really quite good yesterday, it had that good upward dynamic to take it out of the range. That's been completely countermanded. It's down nearly 11.50 in here today at 218. So that's just a rule of thumb that we use at the chart seminar. If the dynamic that takes the instrument back into the range following a breakout, so a failed breakout, if that dynamic is bigger than the dynamic that caused the breakout in the first place, then you're probably going to get a retest at the bottom of the range. So we can probably expect that from gasoline, probably moving back towards 200. Now, moving into sort of our big picture, longer term themes. I'll start off with equities. Now, I'll start off by saying that our two major themes for the very long term is supply inelasticity meets rising demand and emerging markets. Now, those are certainly not mutually inexclusive, because the supply inelasticity side of the equation comes from the bear market in industrial commodities, which has lasted for over 20 years and only ended in sort of 2001, between 2001 and 2003, depending on which industrial commodity you're looking at. But the rising demand side of that equation comes exactly from the emerging markets. And when you have demand like that seen in China and in India and in the rest of the emerging world, that there are 5.5 billion people in the emerging markets who aspire to the standard of living, or an approximation of the standard of living which we enjoy in the Western world, and there's not much is going to stop them from trying to attain that goal, which means that they have an incredible amount of infrastructure which has to be built, and that doesn't come out of thin air, and they need increasing, or well, ever increasing amounts of raw materials. And the two main beneficiaries of this have been the base metals like copper, nickel, zinc, and the energy complex. Now, I think today we use approximately 80 billion barrels of oil a year. Or I think that's, sorry, that's 89 million barrels of oil a day. Which means that that amount of oil has to be found every day to replace what our current reserves are. And because there hasn't been a major oil discovery in really a very long time, I think it's over 10 or 15 years since we've had a really big king oil field discovered, that means that we're probably running out of cheap oil. Now, that doesn't mean we're running out of oil, because there's plenty of oil out there. But what it does mean is we're probably running out of cheap oil, which means that energy and oil and natural gas in particular are in secular bull markets, which means that the current prices of $74 almost for oil is probably going to stay up there for really quite a long time. And anyone who's thinking that oil is going to go back to $25 anytime soon is probably in need of a serious reality check. That has obviously massive implications for stock markets, because if you have oil continuing to move up, and this is well before we've had any kind of weather-related activity coming into the energy complex, but if we have oil moving up towards $80 a barrel, and possibly even higher, with the advent of any hurricane sweeping into the Gulf of Mexico, that's going to be a major headwind for stock markets. Now, moving on to our big picture theme for stock markets, the most recent bubble that we had in stock markets, in major stock markets, was the Nasdaq bubble and the tech bubble, which peaked in 2000. Now, that was such an enormous acceleration and a diminution of people's capital that it has destroyed the confidence in investing of a generation. Which also means that anyone who says that we're moving into a new secular bull market for equities in the US is probably not appreciating what exactly the mania that ended in 2000 was all about. So we're in a secular bear market in the US, and we define that as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. So while stock markets, and when you look at the longer term chart of, for example, the S&P, you'll see that it hasn't really done very much at all in the last year or in the last 2 years. What we look at is that contraction of PE ratios. When you look at the peak of a bull market, you have very, very expanded PEs, and those gradually start coming back in. I'm just going to cough. Bear with me for a second. Excuse me. So, generation long period of P ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. This means that when we chart the P ratio, we can see that for the S&P, the PE right now is historically quite high. It's 17.06 on the S&P today, and the dividend yield is 1.85. When we finally get to the bottom of the bear market, regardless of what has happened to the actual price of the S&P in that time because of inflation, it could very easily stay up close to where it is now, or possibly even appreciate. But we're not going to see the kind of acceleration that we saw back in 2000 anytime soon in any of the US markets. So P ratios will probably come back quite a bit more than they are already, because they're still relatively expensive, particularly when you look at some of the other markets. When you look at, for example, the ratios for India, and we can argue that India's growth potential probably far outweighs the US, well, P ratios there are 19.5. Now, that's still expensive for India, but the growth potential there is significantly higher than for the US. So when we talk about a bear market in equities in the US, that does not mean that we're thinking about a bear market in equities in general. Quite the opposite, in fact. The chances are, because of the demographics and the growth that are existent in particularly in emerging markets, it means that these are going to be the growth engines going forward. And particularly in developed markets, Japan has just finished its bear market. That one peaked in 1989, and it's been in a bear market, water tortured, terribly grinding bear market for ever since. And that one broke out of its base last year, which means that while no market is going to be able to uncouple completely from the US, when we often talk about the Wall Street leash effect. Wall Street leash effect is that when you have the US is steady to rising, that leaves out liquidity and leaves out the reins or the leash on other stock markets. That means that emerging markets, which are very high beta in general, will run on the upside and you'll get remarkably good returns. On the other hand, when you have the US falling or contracting, that pulls the leash in, and any of those high beta markets will fall back really quite sharply. But of course, the whole point about the Wall Street leash effect is that all markets are high beta in one respect or another, whereas Japan didn't run up nearly as much, for example, as India. It hasn't come back nearly as much either, but they've all corrected in line with the US. So while there's a bear market in the US, there might well be a bull market just about all the way across Asia. But they're not going to go up in isolation to the US. If the US is correcting or the US is contracting and liquidity is getting pulled back, that is going to have a knock-on effect across the board. And that's largely what we've seen recently. We had a couple of smaller markets starting to peak out earlier on this year, particularly those Middle Eastern markets, which I think were probably the most recent case of a bubble in any market, not just in developed markets. So that was a signal to us that liquidity was starting to get drawn in. You had a correction in the US and across the board that also pulled back many other stock markets. And of course, because of the amount of liquidity that has been pumped into the system, that liquidity didn't just flow into the stock markets, it also flew into the commodity markets. So you had acceleration in a lot of the base metals recently, which was an ending, at least now in the medium term. And a lot of these commodities, particularly the base metals and the base metals and the precious metals, are in medium term corrections right now. But the liquidity factor is a major bugbear of ours, because central bankers have stoked the flames of a new inflationary cycle. When the Nasdaq bubble burst and there was a major panic about a Japanese-style deflation, The Fed intervened very quickly and slashed interest rates and pumped up liquidity to really quite incredible levels. And this defrayed the US markets from or the US economy from sinking into deflation. But what it did do was stoke the fires of inflation. So while they were still beating the body of deflation, they neglected the fact, or they promoted the fact, that inflation was out of the bag. And we are now in a new inflationary cycle. You can quite easily see this now when you look at the yield charts for the long-dated government bonds in the US. They're starting to break up from a very long-term base. So if we're in a new inflationary cycle, that means that precious metals are going to be the store of value more than really any other asset. So gold, which had been in a terrible bear market, we saw that the bottom of that market back in 2003, when the Bank of England sold its gold and Rothschilds closed their gold desk. That really was the bottom, and the chances of us ever going back to $250 gold, at least in the next 20 to 30 years, are really, really quite slim. So it's a new inflationary cycle, which means that we're in a generational-long period where precious metals are going to be appreciating in price, and we're going to have rolling waves of rising interest rates. Now, the Fed has been rising interest rates for 17 straight sessions, and they're starting to signal that they're reasonably close to a peak. And because the interest rate commentary and markets in general are really very, very emotional when it comes to interest rates, and currently the feeling is that we're reasonably close to a peak. When people were talking just 2 weeks ago, they were starting to talk about 5.5%, and only a couple of months ago they thought that 5% really was the absolute peak. So there's no way of knowing how high they're going to go, but they are starting to signal that they're reasonably close to a peak. And when we look at the long-term charts of the interest rates, we can see that it was around 5.5 to 6% was where interest rates, excuse me, stood between 1994 and 1999, I think, and then they started moving them up, which eventually peaked and sorry, pricked the Nasdaq bubble. So if we're looking for an area in inverted commas where they look at where they call it normal, chances are that's going to be between 5 and 6%. So that's just a that's my common sense approach to where they're going to cease. Of course, there's absolutely no guarantee that that's correct. But in the long term, they are rearming the interest rate weapon right now so that if there is a financial crisis down the line, they'll have room to cut interest rates. But the question really is once they start cutting interest rates again to combat whatever problem arises, are they going to be able to bring them right back to 1%? And I would suspect probably not, that we're not going to see the degree of interest rate cuts that we saw back in sort of 2000, 2001, but it'll probably come back probably lower than we are today. And then next time they start to tighten, they'll probably go higher than they are, or whenever they call a peak in here today, or in the next couple of weeks or months. So we're going to see a rising, gradually see rising lows in interest rates, which will as usher in, well, we've already ushered in the new inflationary cycle, but it is gradually starting to become part of the public consciousness. And I think it was that news story that I posted yesterday about the ECB, which was absolutely terrible humbug, where you have Trichet coming out on one hand saying that he's going to be ever vigilant on inflation, and on the other hand growing the M3 by nearly 9%. I think GDP growth in the Eurozone was under 2% last year. So they're growing M3 at over four times what GDP is growing at, which really cannot be described as anything other than massively stoking inflation. So given the fact that we are in a new inflationary environment, and chances are that this is going to be quite extensive, It means that anything that's a store of value is probably going to go up in going to go up in price. It's going to be precious metals, works of art, and so far it's been housing. Unfortunately, because speculating in housing requires large loans, and if you have rising interest rates, and particularly if you've got a floating rate mortgage, it makes repayments rather pricey once interest rates start going up. So while speculation in housing is probably going to become more expensive, the value of property is probably going to stay pretty steady. If we were to see a fall, a dramatic fall in the price of housing, then that could be an impetus where they would start lowering interest rates and pumping even more liquidity into the system. Because a collapse in the housing market anywhere in the world is the last thing a central bank wants, for just for one very basic reason, that it's going to absolutely destroy consumer spending and consumers' vote and politicians, regardless of whether central banks are independent or not, have an influence on central bankers. So the last thing they're going to want is house prices collapsing. They'll do whatever they can to make sure that doesn't happen. But that doesn't mean they're not going to try and slow down the pace at which they're growing, which they have done recently. But because you have this massive inflation, that does mean that the value of fiat currencies, and all currencies are fiat now because of the competitive influences of globalization. It means that no country wants a strong currency. And because of the massive current account deficit in the US, current and capital account deficits, the Treasury isn't going to want to have a particularly strong dollar, and they're printing money with abandon to keep the dollar relatively weak. Now, we were never, and we still aren't, in the dollar collapse camp, and we don't think that's going to happen. But when we look at, say, the dollar index, which is reasonably low, or reasonably close to all-time lows, I think it's sitting at 85 right now, so it's weak in here today. It's broken down out of the more or less the what I'll call the June range, and it would make a retest of the lows around 84 a possibility. But you're probably not going to have huge depreciation of the dollar, because that would put enormous pressure on sterling and on yen and in euros, and they don't want strong currencies either. So they're going to be printing money like there's absolutely no tomorrow to make sure that the dollar doesn't get too weak. Which means that when you look at charts like the euro or on the dollar index, you're probably going to see a lot of range trading, and you're not going to see these giant secular bull markets like you would in a commodity or an equity or even in government bond yields, simply because no country wants to have that strong currency. Now, the when you look at the dollar index, that's made up of reserve currencies, and they certainly don't want stronger currencies. Now, there's a lot of room for appreciation in some of the Asian currencies. So on the Asian dollar index, which is made up of Singapore dollars and Korean won and the renminbi, there is the room there for appreciation. So that's probably a better chart to keep an eye on if you want to see how the dollar is starting to lose its value, because those Asian currencies will probably get a bit stronger. Now, obviously, they want to protect themselves as well, but I don't think they're going to go to the same lengths that you're going to see the Europeans or the Japanese going to. And with Europeans, I'm lumping in the UK in with Europe. So that also feeds in with our inflationary theme, which means that precious metals really do have a long way to go up. Now, of course, there's no way of figuring out exactly how high these metals are going to go. When we look at the inflation-adjusted charts, what the inflation-adjusted charts show us is that they're significantly lower than those peaks that we saw back in the 70s. But those aren't a good way of predicting how high the metal is going to go in the future. What we can reasonably assume is that they're going to be multiples of where we are today, and that we're still really in the early stages of the bull market. Because even though we saw an acceleration recently, which took some of the base metals up to highs which hadn't been seen in quite some time, and some of them to all-time new highs, that was still we're still in the early stages of development. For example, in countries like India, and China has got growth projections going out to 2020, and the amount of resources that those countries are going to need, not to mention the Middle East and Indonesia, Pakistan, and at some point Africa. Well, that means that this is a story that's going to be running and running and running for the foreseeable future, and I expect to be commenting on it for the vast majority of my career. And what that does mean is that this is the early stage, and the acceleration that we saw recently is probably going to be nothing compared to the type of acceleration that is going to mark the climax of this entire trend. But again, that's probably not going to happen for at least another 10 years. But in the meantime, we'll monitor the charts. And just a couple of sort of news items. I think David was released from hospital today, so he's at home, and he hopes to be back in the office sometime next week. But if it's not next week, it'll be the week after that. So he's thrilled to be home. And congratulations to Germany for their victory over Argentina, and condolences to our subscribers in Argentina. I don't think we have any subscribers in the Ukraine, but good luck to Italy this evening, and I think we'll all be glued to the screen watching England tomorrow. But I think the whole of the UK and probably Europe will be glued to the TV watching soccer over the weekend. But for anyone else, I hope you enjoy your weekend, and thank you for your time.